My name's Stuart Immonen. I'm sort of a long-time fixture in the Toronto area as far as the comic scene goes. But we'll talk about that, you know, at length, for the next hour at least. And hopefully that will be enough for everybody. The format is very loose and free-form, so feel free to shoot a hand up and ask questions at any point, and we'll answer things. The slideshow is just going to carry on. It's not in any particular order, although I do start with some very, very early work from both of us at the beginning, and then it just kind of ambles on. So we're just going to talk, but we invite you to talk along with us. So, like I said, I'm Stuart. This is Sean Phillips. Introduce yourself.
Hi.
Sir. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Who are you?
I'm Sean Phillips. It's my first time in Toronto. It's my first time in Canada. I've been drawing comics for a long time now, about 30 years. But most of my stuff would have been in the UK for the first 10 years or so. Have you got stuff like that to show?
Yeah, well, a little bit from your very early days.
And then I spent 20 years with DC and Marvel. So.
whatever. Similarly, I started working in the late 80s, self-publishing, and then working for some very small press companies that are all gone, thankfully. At this point, got into DC probably around the same time you did, in the early 90s, 93 for me, and worked for them for about a decade, and then worked for Marvel since about 2000. So. This is going to switch over to something that is maybe embarrassing for you,
or maybe not
so embarrassing, since you put it on your blog, and this is in your art book.
Yeah,
isn't it?
There's an art book of myself, came out from Dynamite last winter, and in that goes right back to the early stuff I've got. I did this one was about 13 or 14, something like maybe 15 even. I made lots of comics with my friends when I was kids. We started off doing stuff. For the local paper when I was 12, we had a strip for the local paper every week for about 3 months, maybe about 12 episodes. And we thought that was it, you know, that would be half the fame and fortune, but it didn't really turn out like that. And then when I was about 13, I met a guy that drew British comics. British comics are much different to North American comics. They're weekly, they're usually anthologies, and you get a lot of different sorts of subject matter. I work for comics aimed specifically young girls, sort of 12-year-old girls, maybe that sort of age. And there'll be stories about Victorian orphans or girls who want to be ballerinas or gymnasts, or stories about girls and their horses and stuff like that. And that's all gone now. All those comics died out by the early 90s. I did a few years of that, and I met a guy that did that when I was 13. He did a class at my school teaching people how to do cartoons. So me and my friend, who were mad on Spider-Man and stuff like that, thought, yeah, we'll go to that. And we found out that it was... Yeah, this is my first properly published story. We thought we'd learn how to break in and work for Marvel. Barry Smith had done it. He was the only person from the UK that ever got to work for American Comics back then. We thought, well, we'll do that too. But Ken Houghton, who ran the class, drew this sort of stuff. He drew girls' comics, almost exclusively. And this is the first thing I did with Ken. He would have got the job. It was for an annual. Winter in the UK, they have annuals based on TV shows or long-running comics, like the Beano and the Dandy, which like humour comics, they've been like that. The girls' comics all had annuals, the war comics, the sci-fi comics, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So this was a three-page story.
That's
not possible.
But I know that from my experience, the one question that I get asked, and I assume that everybody gets asked, is how do you get in? But when your experience is so unique, where you know you were in as a very young teenager, do you get out of this question automatically? Do you just not have to answer?
But the way I did it doesn't exist anymore. I was 15 when I drew that first thing, mm-hmm. So I was still at school. It was my Saturday job instead of working, doing paper round or something. I did that instead, and. There was a lot of work available. They were desperate for people to fill up these anthology comics. Mm. It's not there no more. So, when everybody asks me how did I break in, I can't give any advice on how anyone else might break in, because
Well, yeah, the situation is...
No, it's just totally different now.
It's similar.
Even since you started, you know, in the late 80s, that's all gone, all that sort of stuff.
Right, it was all independent publishing, and like I said, we were self-publishing, and I had... This is the kind of work that I was doing when I was 18, with Catherine, my wife Catherine, who was here, on scripts. And, you know, it's rather embarrassing compared to yours, but this was actually a style that was chosen specifically that sort of fit into what was being done in independent comics at that time. But, you know, there was a similar sort of bootstrap pulling going on in the UK. Paul Gravett was doing Escapes and the A1 anthology and Trident Comics and you know, people like
I bypassed all that stuff because I was already getting published in the girl stuff, and I went to college to do a degree in graphic design thinking I'd get a proper job one day, and comics was just a whole thing. It never happened. You know, by the time, when I came out of college in like July, by September, I was full time working in comics because 2000 AD, which published Judge Dredd and stuff like that, still do. They set up a new comic, a fortnightly fully painted comic, which is too much for any one artist to do. So they were already looking for fillings even before it launched, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. It's just total luck.
This is another independent book published by Ripoff Press that that I did the art for. Called Nut Runners, which is about warring fast food restaurants. But again, the 2000 AD stuff, the real professional work that was being published in the UK wasn't coming over here. But what was coming over here were these black and white independent books. Yeah. So I was influenced by Eddie Campbell and people like that, and people that were jumping right in. Doing... their own material and either publishing it themselves or doing it on a shoestring. So I realized quite early on that I couldn't make a career out of or make a living wage out of doing that material. So I immediately shifted gears and started doing portfolio stuff that was geared towards working for large publishers.
Yeah. So how did you do for superhero stuff?
Specifically, but just about anybody. I submitted to Archie and you know, whoever would pay any attention. But so how did the people at Vertigo start making inroads in the UK?
Well, they started in the early 80s. Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons went to work for DC. They started doing Green Lantern, Superman and stuff like that. And every year at the big British show in London, someone from DC would come over to talent scout, really. Mm-hmm. And that, most of the time it would be Carrie Burger, who was the head of Vertigo and what became Vertigo. And I just, me and a friend made an appointment to see her one day in a hotel suite and showed her this great idea we have for this Joker graphic novel. It was just before Arkham Asylum came out by Neil Gaiman, David King, on Amazon, was it Grant?
Yeah.
Marshall and David King. And I was seeing some of the art because I knew Dave slightly at the time, so we thought, oh yeah, this will be like this. So I went home, did 6 pages of the Joker graphic novel, which looked just like David drawn it, without the skill. And my friend John, who I was working with already on 2000 AD, wrote this big synopsis of what we were going to do with this Joker thing. We thought they'd snap it up, but we had no idea that Karen didn't like superheroes and wasn't remotely interested in anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she has the stuff that she thought I might be good for, so I got to do some novelism. That was my first American comic in about 1991, maybe.
Right.
But I don't really went looking for it. It just sort of happened. I just happened to, again, be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Well, I attended a convention in New York, must have been in 91 or 92, and you know, we were just trying to get there and shake hands with people who were on their home ground, so to speak. There wasn't. We did meet an assistant editor who was doing the rounds, but he said we can't do anything for you right now. But if you stay on an extra day through till Monday after the convention, I can get you an appointment with Neil Posner, who's the talent scout for DC at that time. And one of the things that DC was doing was a book called Showcase, which is an anthology which paired up established talents, like established writers, with novice artists, and the other way around. So they had something that was saleable, but still they could try out people that didn't have a lot of experience. So in addition to selling the book, they could actually use these short stories, 10 pages or so, to show around the office to see if anybody was looking for work to do there. And it really just, that snowballed for me very quickly. I did my 10-page story, and then I did a fill-in issue of Legion of Superheroes, and then I did the regular series Legion of Superheroes for 4 years, and that turned into a gig on Superman, which I also wrote for a period. So, again, similar to you, I went looking, but I didn't look as hard as a lot of people that have to. And I think being quite young, 18, 19, really was something in my favor.
Yeah. I did similar thing. All my growing up stuff was in girls' comics, which no one ever saw. Mm-hmm. That would have been some of the stuff I would have showed 2008 to get in there. And because it was so strange, and no one else really comes from that area of comics, obviously stuck in their mind a little bit. So when, like a year later, when they did meet somebody, they remembered me. So it was. Mm-hmm. It took a while. There was never anything. I never showed any work, and I got a job straight away. It would always be a year later or 2 years later. Yeah. And they just remembered it.
Did it help that you're? You were doing painted comics too, or you know, showed skill as a painter as well as an artist in black and white?
Yeah, maybe. When I first started doing stuff in DC, I didn't really know how to do black and white stuff. I'd done the girls' comics, but that was nowhere near the sort of style that I could draw Hellblazer in.
Sure.
So I had to sort of totally reinvent how I did stuff. I'd done about 2 or 3 years maybe of painting stuff for 2008 by then. But I couldn't do that on American comic book because it just takes so long. There's too many pages.
Sure. But, Do you think having a facility with a variety of media was an asset at that time? I think it is now, because you're doing stuff that's outside comics as well.
Yeah, but it was then, I think, because eventually I got to do my own covers as well, because this is pre-Vertigo, all those comics that end up being Vertigo, Hellblazer, Doom Patrol and stuff like that, they had painted covers, and when they paint, I could paint as well. And I could do both in the time. That was the main thing, you know. I could do a 22-page comic and paint the cover quite easily in a month. Mm-hmm. And that was the rare thing, I think. And I didn't have an inker either. I did the whole thing myself, which, because that's how you do it in British comics. Everyone, you do the whole job, it doesn't get broken down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely did that.
But I'd say that, I mean, you say, for instance, that the... that you hadn't, or that you had to reinvent yourself for Hellblazer, but I'd say that you're still drawing from that well. Your work does not look exactly that way, of course, but I'd say that you really sort of cemented the way that you approach things by that time, and you've pretty much stuck in that wheelhouse.
Mostly, I think, I'm sort of trying to. Get better at it, I suppose.
Yeah, well...
I'd like to think that every job changed the art slightly just to suit the project, but, at the moment I only do sort of dark, shadowy stuff because that's the sort of books I draw.
Right.
There was
But you take on all kinds of work. I mean, you drew part of a story that I wrote on Superman, and that was, far removed from...
Yeah, I felt like a total fraud on that one. Drawing superhero comics is really hard. You have to know anatomy, which I don't know. I like drawing people with clothes on because you can fake a lot more stuff.
Well, they've got...
That's some stuff there. I mean, the muscle guy there, that's from the Judge Red magazine, that's Captain Devin War. That's all taken from Muscle Max.
But that's not cheating. I mean, photo reference quite a lot.
I use photo reference for everything.
Yeah. And I know that there, among certain artists, that's considered, not something to do, that you've got to do it the hard way.
Why do it the hard way?
You
know, you can do it the easy way. It's not that easy. I was talking to people yesterday when I was in there going through my art and stuff and looking at my books, and so many people were like, use photos. Because most photograph art looks quite stiff and stilted, and mine doesn't as much. I think to me, it still does myself, but other people can seem to think it doesn't. So it's how you use it. It's
right.
Using any tool you use, any reference, any whatever. No, it all As long as it gets the does the job.
Yes.
Do whatever it takes.
I agree.
No, no, I'm not trying to
push it. although we're just scrolling through lots of different stuff here. In this case, this is a book that I a different book that I did with Catherine called Moving Pictures, and I this was done at the same time that I was working for Marvel, so it was 5-6 days a week working for Marvel and then doing something that was in a completely different style, and I felt like you know, a change is as good as a rest in some cases where I was able to, you know, do something that was personal but also freed me up for and sort of flushed out all the stuff that I was dealing with working with heavy photo reference and you know, dealing with the problems of anatomy and other scripts and so on. So I was able to, you know, work different muscles.
Yeah.
And do something completely different. Yeah. And I noticed that, you know, in certain cases, you're doing the same thing. I think I have some examples here where you've changed the style within... well, this is quite different in particular.
Yeah, that's sort of...
kind of the Nolan influence.
I think in the colour, yeah.
Okay.
Not necessarily in the drawing style. That's just a refinement of how I used to draw Hellblazer. David Keane was a big influence on my Hellblazer. He did one issue of Hellblazer, which was beautifully drawn and sort of scratchy pen work.
Yeah.
So when I picked up a pen, that's how I did it. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of got away from that. And then I did a few covers for the Batman book. I went back to that tool, and it's just a sort of slightly slicker, refined version of it. Mm-hmm. Because it's a cover, it's only a graphic, and it's meant to, you know, make you pick it up off the shelf.
Right.
So it's a totally different mindset to draw interior pages.
So when you're... do all the design work for... covers and advertising
all the stuff, all the books I do with Edmund Baker, like Criminal and Fatal and all those other things, I do all the design on that, and that's the best bit of the job. But thumbnailing the story is good because you're working, you're thinking, and then the design stuff is nice, but all the rest of it is a bit of a slog. All the drawing is
especially like, working with him.
Yeah.
But I said it.
But yeah, I like doing all the design. I did a degree in graphic design, so I sort of got the hang of it a bit. And I'm a total control freak, and I like not giving it to anyone else to do.
Sure. Yeah. And giving the opportunity.
Yeah.
Why not? I think we're moving on to some more process stuff with both of us. So, and I think we work in similar ways, but you work, you do digital work now, but not exclusively.
Only the last couple of weeks.
Oh.
The odd job, if it's a, you know, I do quite a lot of 8-page stories, maybe for Dark Horse or whoever asked, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the sort of places I try the technique out.
Okay.
So I've done a couple where there's been digital. Okay. I did a book called User about 10 or 15 years ago, maybe, for Vertigo, and that was purely digital.
Okay.
But I didn't even like it.
Yeah, it's weird
like
to work
like
on a piece of glass.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
the difference particularly?
Yeah.
I noticed on Twitter you said that you got a cover. Like a screen.
Oh yeah, from Cincy. Yeah, like a.
So it gives it some teeth, or
yeah, it protects it because I'd already put a great big scratch across it. So I thought I'd better cover it, and it's got a tooth. It feels more like you draw on the paper. The pen dragged a bit more. Otherwise, it's too slippery.
Mm-hmm. But this is some of your layout work, and this is done in a blue marker.
Yeah, what I do for most of my stuff is because I always usually let my own stuff as well in the Comicraft font based on my handwriting. I do the panel borders and the letter in the Illustrator on the computer, print it out in blue, and then draw with a blue marker because it's obviously getting too tight.
Mm-hmm.
From that, I'd go straight to ink on that. But I have also got my photo in front of me as well, so it's not totally out of my head.
Right.
It just makes it starts drawing it twice.
Oh, well, or only twice.
Well, only
once
twice,
in
yeah.
blue and once in...
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you know, I've never had to tight pencils for another artist. Well, a couple of times I have, but I don't really work like that.
Yeah,
I don't know how you do it.
Well,
but
you know, but the relationship that I have with the inker that I work with, Wade von Grabadger, is very long running. Right?
Yeah.
We've been doing stuff together for more than 15 years, and I've had the opportunity to. This is some pencil work. To you know, do a pinup or a cover with somebody else, or to ink it myself, either traditionally or digitally, and. It's never as satisfying as what I can accomplish with Wade, but I think most of that has to, I mean, he he's obviously has the facility to work with his tools, but most of that is an understanding that we've developed over a long period.
Yeah.
But I do have some collaborative stuff here for you. There was a slide here with that showed some a 3D model that I developed, which was then used by Marvel to be used by everybody. So it was the Avengers Mansion is available on their FTP server, so people can download it, and the thing's consistent throughout. But do you use 3D tools? Do you use some photographs in addition to your blue mark drawings?
Yeah. Sometimes on in the pencil stage, I'll drop a photograph in blue as well on the page, and then just ink over the top of that. Mm-hmm. Not of figure F, but for backgrounds and stuff. If I'm drawing a skyscraper or whatever,
right.
I don't rather than using a black box, which I always found quite distancing.
Yes, sure. You lose some of the.
I did a French book, which is also coming out in English in September, called Void, and it's set on a spaceship. And I found someone on the internet and built me a 3D model of the spaceship.
Right. Well, this is actually when I started to use 3D models heavily. It was when I was doing a book called Star Rockets with Kurt Busiek, and I had to invent these spaceships that hadn't been seen before. I had no reference for them, so I had to build the reference, and I could have built actual three-dimensional physical models, I guess. That would have taken a long time, and I found that having just a basic 3D sketch that I could rotate in any direction and change the perspective lines on was a real help, and I ended up I go back and forth on it. Often it looks like too much like a 3D model with characters drawn on top for me, and it's still a struggle to.
I quite enjoyed it when I did well, but I didn't design the spaceship. I just told him what it had to do for the story, and then he went away and did it.
Right.
And that was great, because I was on the back, and I would never, because I'm not...
The went away part was the ideal aspect.
Yeah. I've never met him in real life, it's someone on the internet. But I've never been that sort of artist that likes designing stuff. I like telling stories, that's the thing, why I do comics.
Except for covers, and so on. But that's a different kind of design.
Yeah, but that's just like you said about your day off job.
It's a completely different skill when you see... people that can do like fully rendered speed paintings of atmospheric science fiction stuff—it's amazing. But it's something that is a skill that is not required.
I wouldn't know where to start with anything like that. I mean, I'm totally self-taught as an artist. Everything I've learned is from looking at other people's art or reading a book on how to paint or whatever. Mm-hmm.
So do you find now, I mean I know you bought my sketchbooks, and I know that you retweet a lot of other people's art on Twitter, so are you immersed in what's going on in the field right now, or are you involved at least in terms of getting inspiration or following people?
I keep an eye on what's going on.
Sure.
I prefer... the stuff I love retweets, someone like Ian McHugh, who's concept designer for Rockstar Games. They did Grand Theft Auto, I think he worked on that. But he does really nice speed paints of spaceships and things, and sort of like big, rusty, hulking, floating boats floating over the rooftops of Venice and stuff like that. So that's stuff I'd love to be able to do, but I just like watching someone else do it. If you do the video of how to do it, then I'd have a go.
Right.
I mean, I've got a Drew Struzan DVD on how he painted a Hellboy movie poster. Mm-hmm. And I did use that quite heavily when I did a movie poster, because I just thought I'd go to the...
You should know,
So, and I do occasionally look at stuff specifically to influence my own work, but and it lasts for half a page, and then I just go back to that. it's hard to retain all that stuff.
But do you, do you do, pleasure drawing, stuff that's strictly for you, that has nothing to do with work?
Occasionally.
This is not a chip
cigar. This is just for pleasure.
Different kind.
that was a digital piece. That's when I first started doing digital stuff about 10 years ago or so. My local art place does, live drawing classes, so I've been going to those for a while. I haven't got about a year, but even then I'm thinking I've got to do... piece good enough to hang on the wall.
Right, or at least to show on your blog.
So I find it hard to switch off and just do it purely for pleasure and explore stuff.
Sure.
I've always got a final thing in mind. I don't know if it's bad, I should get away from that, but you know, like you know, there's not much spare time when you're drawing comics.
No, no.
And sometimes the last thing I want to do is pick up a pencil or a paintbrush. You know, after working the day.
But you're still, I mean, this is a different sort of exploration, at least in technique.
Oh, yeah.
Especially compared to the last one, but even, you know, your watercolor stuff or your black and white work. So, obviously it's important to you to keep doing different things and to try different things.
Yeah. But it's hard to fit that into the comic.
Sure, sure. So do you take the opportunity in covers or in other media?
I mean, most of these pictures are in the back of Criminal or Fatale, where we do like an article about stuff, crime fiction or horror fiction or sci-fi stuff. And this is just me trying a new technique on one picture.
Are you specifically trying to mimic like an archaic style like here or...?
No, it just sort of came out a bit like that. No, I mean, I've been...
So more in the props rather than the technique.
Yeah, I mean, I have been looking at a lot of old 1950s magazine illustrators, like Joe Bowler or Al Clark and stuff like that, trying to figure out how they did it. But I can only tell, I don't really know how they did it, so I'm trying to sort of teach myself how to paint a gouache or try to do something different to what I used to do.
There are a couple
I'm sure there must be a magic brush somewhere which no one's talking about. I'm just looking for that.
Well, this is the other question that people who are trying to break in always ask about. You know, they always want to know about the tools, right? They want to know what kind of paper you draw on, what kind of pencil you draw on, and clearly that stuff doesn't matter that much.
It does a little bit. I mean, when I first started going to that class when I was 13, the fact that comics weren't drawn with a ballpoint pen was a revelation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a sable brush and Indian ink and nice crystal ball to draw on, and that definitely helps.
Mm-hmm.
You get the basics, but after that, it doesn't really matter what you use.
No.
I mean, I've drawn comics in ballpoint pen, I've drawn comics in charcoal, in oil paint, in pen and ink, brush and ink, whatever,
right.
Whatever it takes to get the job done.
Sure. But you know, as many times as you say that in public, you still get the question, right? You still have people at that level, whether it's 13 or 18 or whatever, and they still... Well, I guess they want to use the tools that the professionals use. But when you...
And most of us do use a very small range of tools.
Yeah.
So,
do you think that a working digitally is... with the experience that you've had with it, is too wide open? I mean, I know that there are some people that... That are keen to, find a pre-made tool that works with or works similar to an analog tool.
Yeah.
But I find the tools out of the box are pretty much fine. Has it mattered to you yet?
There is that infinite choice you get on a computer now that you don't get using a little paint or pencil or whatever. So there's that sort of thing. Because there is all this variety and you can try loads of different things, you should do really, but again, there's always the time, you never have time to try all that stuff. You know, if you've got 2 days to paint a cover and it's got to be in on that time, I haven't got time to do a bad one first and then do a good one. You know, it's got to be my first time.
Right.
So yeah, that should be my sort of out of work hours stuff that I experiment with, that sort of thing, but it's in the time.
Okay. There are a couple of DVD covers that are up here. Has that opportunity come about as a result of working on your own stuff, having control over your own work?
I think so. I mean, the first one I did, that was for Criterion, and I did a film called Blast of Silence, the DVD cover for that, because we'd done an article about it in the back of Criminal. Mm-hmm. And the guy who's an art director at Criterion read that comic and thought, oh, here we go.
Right.
And it just sort of happened. It was like, I've never gone looking for this sort of stuff. It just sort of...
And you don't have an agent that appeals to this kind of thing?
But that guy uses quite a lot of comic people on Criterion books.
Okay.
And DVDs are Bill Sienkiewicz, Jaime Hernandez, Jock, me, probably a dozen different guys.
And this piece?
That was a film that I did last year that I think that premiered at the Toronto National Film Festival last summer. The guy who produced the movie is a friend of Ed Brubaker, who I do my comics with, and he just said, oh, I need someone to do a poster for me. And originally it was just going to be taking a still from some stills from the movie and adding some type and just doing some design. And I did about 30 different variations on that, and the guy goes, oh, I've got this paint on my office wall. Do you think you could do, make it like that? So he sent me a photograph of it. So, well, that's a painting. Ah, do you think you could do a painting? Not for that money, I couldn't, but, you know, if you up it, it'll do my right. Well. So I did this, and that was, that's not happening.
Yeah, that's all right.
You know, that was sort of like doing my sort of Drew Struzan and film poetry type thing. So I used what I learned from watching him paint a Hellboy comic.
Do you find that working outside comics, that there are a lot of different business hoops that you have to jump through?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what I like about comics is being able to tell stories, but also being able to tell stories without a whole lot of interference. So decisions that I make as far as, you know, pacing or camera angles or the way characters look or techniques used, they're all up to me, and I don't think that I've had too many panels turned back to me to redo. But I found that in a couple of jobs that I've done outside comics, the permissions have been crazy. Even if it doesn't have to go through an estate or anything, if it's just one company. I did a comic for Target stores, and just going through all the levels of the hierarchy was crazy, and makes me very shy about doing that kind of thing, even though the money's better.
Money would be a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really spoiled now because all the stuff I do with Ed is just me and him. You know, mm-hmm. We don't have an editor, we don't have anybody to sell us, we can't do anything. And even to go back to work for a regular comic where there is an editor or, you know, Marvel or whatever, I think I'd find that really hard.
Sure.
You know, I don't really want to go back there. You know.
Well, especially when you're being given opportunities as a result of doing that work, mm-hmm. like the Criterion jobs.
Yeah, so that was easy. I mean, we had a couple of those ones, they were heavy art directors, and they knew what they wanted before they came to me. I was just a pair of hands to do a painting, mm-hmm. which was fine, but a couple of the other ones were more, you know, we went through ideas and stuff.
Okay.
One of the ones we did, I did the cover for Sweet Smell of Success, Tony Curtis and Burt Lancaster movie, and even though it was a 60-year-old movie, the contract was set in place where both their likenesses had to be the same size on the cover. And the amount of hoops we had to get through to get them so they weren't just the two guys stood next to each other. It was quite hard. I had another idea for the sort of love triangle part of the movie, but we couldn't do that because the female character couldn't be any bigger than those two faces. So that was frustrating, but in the end it didn't make for a much better cover.
Right.
Because we had to do something different.
Right. And sometimes restrictions are actually beneficial. Yeah. It makes you think a little bit harder about the job. With this, I wanted to ask you about panel regularity and the actual design of a page. And I know that the stuff you're doing with Ed specifically is very easy to digest.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not very designy. You're not sort of exploring triangle shapes or even leading to the edge of the page a lot. Everything's very regular. And is that something that you just do on instinct? Is that something that you developed over the years and something that you like, or is that something that you've specifically designed for people that might not be immersed in comics as readers?
That's, okay. There was two reasons why we did it. One is because we were doing crime fiction and we thought we might accidentally trick someone who likes crime novels into picking up a comic. And if we did, we wanted them to be easy for them to read. So everything is three tiers, all the blues read left to right at the top of the panels. So you don't need to. We didn't want to make it difficult for anybody. And also, there's also a reaction against our previous book, Sleeper, where that was really comic-y in the way the panels were laid out. We did like a big super panel, and then all the other panels cascaded around that, and the UI was led by the balloons. Some pages went like an anti-clockwise spiral, so for non-comic reader, I think that'd be really quite difficult. Mm-hmm. So we've kept it up until now. I think on our next book, we're going to do the same, but the one after that next year, I'm going to go back to no grid. Just because it makes it. We've talked about this. Okay.
And it's in four tiers.
Okay. No. I said the other day I didn't like 4-tier grids. Okay. We might be keeping the 3-tier grid again next year. It just got into a good habit. It makes it. It takes away some of the decisions I have to make about layout pages. And I'm not the artist, the sort of artist that likes showing off in how great they can draw an elbow or something. You know, it's all about making the story easy to follow.
Sure. Right. Well, I totally agree, and we went past an example of of mine from another book that Catherine and I are doing, but again, it's not for a superhero audience. It's not for an audience that, you know, grew up reading comics and knows comics and knows what the visual cues are when characters are outside the panel or overlapping panels or panels with extra, like a colored gutter or anything like that. We just wanted it to be very basic. So sometimes it's not as structured as your work here, but it's generally two or three or four tiers, completely legible for a layperson. Yeah. And we think that's actually really key in order to expand our readership.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, always so that every new project I start with a few rules at the beginning, and one of the rules for when we started Criminal was that it was going to be tiered and no bleed, and just things. It keeps it interesting for me as well. Mm-hmm. Trying to.
Well, again, when you have restrictions like the size of the two heads, then you have to figure out how to work around.
I'm trying to work around these arbitrary rules that I've made for myself, which sometimes when you're 90 pages into a book, you think, oh shit, I wish I hadn't done that, but it does make it interesting.
Mm-hmm. This is the same book, well, and this is not. But this is some of the superhero work that I'm doing, and even though this is a single tier with three fairly regular sized panels, the first panel bleeds in the background of the other two, and that's a mild example of the sort of pyrotechnics that I'm trying to employ in that, just to keep visual interest high. So it's for a different audience. It's for a well versed audience that understands what the
when I'm doing superhero books, then you can do anything you like, really.
Now this is a collaborative work. This is Bill Sienkiewicz on Inks, isn't it?
I forgot to do that.
So was everybody loves Bill. Is this a happy relationship that you had, or was it overpowering?
It was overpowering, but I knew going into it that it was going to be true.
I was inked by Terry Austin in an early job, and it was the same thing. I knew that he would take control. And
but
that
it was great because it meant I got the artwork back afterwards, and I could study how. Something that looks like he's drawn it with a stick. It really does.
An expert.
Yeah, with skill. And that's the only reason I took on the job. He was already attached as the inker. He inked the previous series over a different pencil. And I was just supplying layouts. It wasn't finished pencils either.
Okay.
And I knew he'd go in and do his magic.
Right. This is my pencils under Richard Eisenhoff's painting. So it's a similar sort of situation. He really did his thing.
Yeah, he did the same with me over on... I did the Dark Tower book as well.
And okay.
Yeah, it looked like he'd painted it all on black velvet.
You're using Duochade on this? Yeah. So this is a very old technique?
Yeah, this paper was invented in the 40s or 50s maybe, to get different grey tones in purely black and white printing. This has been shot in colour, so you can see the brown of the paper. You get a piece of paper and you get a couple of chemicals, you paint on, and when you paint the chemical on, the pattern appears. I managed to buy some before the company went out of business a few years ago, so I've got a big stack of them. So some of it I'm saving for one special project.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's going to be.
And I actually wanted to ask about this. Is this a digital color job? Because you're using the pattern in the background.
Yeah.
And the flat color and this sort of spatter, the mud or blood or.
Yeah.
So I guess I wanted to know why.
The black and white line art was drawn just in brush and ink on paper, and then everything else, same on this one as well. And then all the colour stuff was done on computer.
But
the one before where they had the wallpaper pattern, that was out of the pattern book, and I used that as a brush to paint other stuff.
But again, it's like any tool that gets the job done is the most effective tool.
Yeah.
And
I started doing all this because I wanted a sort of fake screen print feel about it. Because the first five or six covers have been full paintings, and they take a long time. I thought it'd be a bit quicker to do it like this. It wasn't really. So sometimes I paint, sometimes it keeps it interesting for me.
Sure.
And we wanted to have something different for each story in the Criminal series.
Right. So instead of collaborating with different people, you're
I do always.
But you're able to use different techniques and different tools to know to accomplish this.
It keeps it interesting. And if I discover someone else's work, I think, oh, why don't they do that?
Right.
And I try it myself, not necessarily know how they did it, but
right.
Give it a go.
This was a digital, all digital piece that I did, I think one of the first, and not only in the manufacturing process, the creation of it, but also in the execution of it. So this was just for devices. So the idea was to use the transitions between panels in a way that could be done on a screen that can't be done on paper, but still leave it in the control of the reader. So as they tap or swipe, panels appear and disappear, and they might appear out of the conventional order, just trying to use the whole canvas in a different way. And I wanted to know if you had desires to explore digital media in that way, or are you still sort of you're willing to do stuff that appears on screens, but prefer?
I prefer it without the bells and whistles. I must admit, you did a lovely job on that. I remember reading that thinking, but there's that weird halfway house between the comic and the cartoon, which
there was
motion comics on there. It's a dead end, really, for the time being.
I agree, but. In this case, it was series of still images, and it was still controlled by the user. There's no sound and there's no movement within the panels. We were just trying to, experiment with the presentation aspect of it. And this actually saw print as well, which was really neat because that the things that I would control normally in the design of a page were taken out of my hands and left in the production department at the office. So,
can I ask a question? Sorry.
Yeah.
So how did you enjoy? I always wondered because I love that thing. I love that you and Wade did that. But how did you do that as an artist? How did you do the panel? Because it was controlled by the reader, but it did change like what Wade's doing with Irredeemable. How did you approach it, and how did you like seeing it in print later, and how many more pages was it?
Well, it was budgeted for... We're going to just...
Sorry.
The slides will carry on and all the time.
My favorite panel will take out.
So. Because you're not talking.
Yeah.
No pressure.
You're two of my favorite artists. But I've always been curious about that.
Well, Mark Waid wrote it, or on paper, Mark Waid is credited as writer. But from the beginning, it was a collaborative effort, and maybe even more so than the normal distribution in the way mainstream comics work. And it was budgeted for 10 pages, and Mark gave me a very loose outline where the very broad beats of what had to happen were there. And it was left up to me to figure out how to transition those beats. And normally, I'll get even a full script that I get from any writer that says, there are this many panels on this page and these people say these things within these panels. But I design the whole page. I choose how to draw the reader's focus by the size of the panel and the camera angle and lighting and any of those other techniques. That's not in the script at all. But this script was even more loose than that. And it's hard to describe without some examples. In some cases the screen would be the 3x4 size, and we would start in the upper corner with a small panel. And then we would, instead of showing the next panel in sequence and the next panel in sequence, we would overlap this panel with more information than we saw previously. So the next one would be in the same place but bigger. So if we start with a blank star field, then we have a little burst of a star in the second panel, and then there would be a third overlap. which would be the full screen, and we see the character emerging from the star first. And in another sequence, there was we did a version of a pan and scan in a movie where the full screen was shown to be a character streaking across a cityscape. And then instead of turning the page or replacing that image with another image, we used a pan effect to show that the panel was in fact quite a bit longer, and we continued the streak and changed the camera angle so that instead of coming towards the reader, the character was now going away.
So did you drop each panel separately then, digitally?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, you didn't create a page, you created each panel.
I created each panel, but I also created the layers. So, I was responsible. It's all my fault.
Yeah. Did you like the process, and did you like the final result?
It made me think a lot harder than I had about any comic work previously, so I liked that aspect of it. Like I said, it was budgeted for 10 pages, and it was essentially a 10-page story, but it ended up being like 40 of these sequences, right? So it wasn't just 40 panels, but 40 groups of three or four or however many. So the amount of work was way more than we had anticipated it was going to be. So I didn't like that much, but I did enjoy the thinking process that preceded it. And they've gone on to do other stuff using the same format, and I think they're still exploring it. They're trying to employ sound in it now, which I'm not really in favor of.
I hope you're not thinking me doing anything like that.
It sounds totally hard. Because Wade was going so on and on about it before it happened, because I know Joe Quesada was really into that, and then you were the first one they did. So I was curious about the process behind it, because when I did see it, I was like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. But I also then thought, how the hell did they put it together? How the hell do you print it?
It was the layers were kept separate, and when it was printed in a book, then they sort of detached the layers from each other, and in some cases they resized them to fit a conventional page. I don't remember exactly. It was probably
10,
more.
Right?
Yeah, it was probably back down to 10, but they got rid of all the fancy stuff, right? So it was just one panel and followed by a different panel rather than a version of the same panel.
Well, thank you. Sorry for interrupting
you. Actually, can you get me? How does a bathroom work? The library. sorry about that. But yes, I'm very interested because I've been checking out Madefire. There's like a Korean place that they have soundtrack behind it for incidental sounds. I want to know how does that work.
I don't know. I don't know anything about what goes on beyond my four walls. You know, if it doesn't happen in my studio, I'm totally in the dark.
But what do you handle for the pan one?
I just need to open the floor to questions.
Mostly
well, yeah, we're actually we're down to the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, so we've done a few of them, and they're a hell of a lot of work.
You guys just talk among yourselves. I don't know.
I've done a few of them. It's mostly Flash animation, and they just upload the packet. So a lot of it's great sensitivity for where you click and then use the panel.
Okay.
It's pretty simple if you know Flash. All
right.
Flash. That's the key word. Again, we just have about 10 minutes left, so if anybody has questions, then please ask them now. In the back.
I've got a very non-technical, non-Flash animation. It's a typography. Sean, you said about the panel yesterday that you had letter on your balloons.
Well, yeah.
And I was just wondering, how much narrative decisions do you make about your hand lettering?
Well, my stuff is lettered digitally, but it's based on a hand-written font. For Criminal, it's always based on my font, and my writing. But for other books, I might change the font up, depending on what feel of that particular comic should be. But I don't get special effects as such. And it's just straight dialogue or captions, and we don't do sound effects hardly ever. If we do, they've always been in the same font. Just keep that consistency, internal consistency to it.
But again, I think that appeals to, or potentially appeals to a lay audience that doesn't understand how the mechanics of a sound that is not inside a balloon is supposed to work.
I mean, I'd like, when I'm reading other people's comics, I like to see as many tools used as possible, but I don't necessarily want them in my comics. This was a great job, this one. Didn't happen in the end. Russell Brand, he is an actor, guy, youth English actor. They're going to launch his autobiography in the States, and they want to do a comic adaptation of the first few chapters. That's a good job. They asked me if I wanted to have a go at that, and I did that as a sample piece. So it would have been a double-page spread, and it would have been taken. That took the first chapter of his book and condensed it down into like 8 captions. Mm-hmm. But he didn't want that. He wanted to look like a comic from the 50s. He wanted like Archie or the Bean or something. I didn't want to do that, so I gracefully declined.
But this is more like a 1950s Sal Parker type illustration, like an illustrated magazine.
Yeah, I thought I didn't think it'd work as a comic, as a series of panels, because the stuff about the way he writes is all about his descriptive stuff. There's no dialogue in an autobiography, so once we made it into a comic, it would have been all captioned and it just would have looked a bit weird. So, and I was also a chance to play with a different type of illustration style, just for my benefit. It didn't happen. They were sold out.
What do you have to say about this?
This was in the back of one of my books of Ed. I don't know which one it is. Was it in Criminal Ed?
It was I think the last of the Ed. Jake Barber wrote an article about Magnum P.I.
Yeah, so I just did a nice cheesy painting.
I love it. Magnum P.I. Laugh. I could have been your Indiana Jones.
It was just a way of trying a new painting technique. I've been looking at a lot of illustrators who paint similarly. It was just my attempt at trying that.
So what medium?
That's painting and acrylic.
It's just some junk idea.
Is that all digital?
This is all digital, based on a very loose pencil sketch. But I think it's Illustrator, actually.
All right. Is that like scan textures there?
Yeah. So I'm trying to, cut into the very rigid look of an Illustrator drawing with organic lines that will break up, sometimes in a random way that I just happen to like, but it's never totally random. It's usually just this laborious process of trying to find the perfect random bit.
One of the reasons I do all these different try different styles and stuff is trying to keep up with the young people, because I'm old now, and if I didn't embrace digital technology, I would eventually be totally so out of fashion that I'd never get a job again. That's one reason why I do that.
I agree, this is so different from the superhero work that I do. I feel the same way. I feel like if I don't, I'm doing myself as a freelance entrepreneur a disservice if I don't try different things and see who bites. And that piece, the Betty and Veronica type piece, was just for fun. But the one before that, the girl with the bell bottoms, was picked up by Getty Images. So it's like clip art for whatever. And that's like an avenue that wasn't available to me, strictly by working in the superhero thing. I want to talk a little bit about black space and lots of it, which you like.
You don't have to draw quite so much then.
We've only got 5 minutes left.
I do like a lot of art that has a lot of black in it. Because I didn't grow up just reading superhero books, I read British comics where they've usually been black and white. You've got a lot of artists that did use a lot of black, and I think it just rubbed off on me. I read a lot of those pre-Beanie magazines from the 70s, the Warren put out with the Spanish artists like Jose Ortez and Esteban Morato and people like that. And it's just another influence on my stuff. I did get asked yesterday if I was a big Ronnie Wood fan, because he did a lot of double light source with a lot of shadows and stuff. And I wasn't particularly, it's just another one of those ones in the mix.
Sure. But it's something that requires a lot of thought, too.
I just tend to think in volume rather than line. Mm-hmm. I think I find whenever I've done any jobs where it's been pure line work, it's much more difficult.
Right.
You have to draw everything properly then.
Here
you get away with, you know, an interesting brush, accidental brush mark, which sort of describes the creases in clothing, but if you looked at it really, it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is actually the one thing about working in collaboration with other artists that, that I find doesn't always translate. I mean, I'm very happy with the people that I work with, in Korean Colors, but when I'm trying to describe these volumes in pencil and have it translated once and then another time, it doesn't always go the whole route. So I can understand.
There's so many marks you can make in a pencil that you can't possibly get in pure black and white ink.
Right.
You always,
so you can make notes in the border, but it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any other questions before we wrap up? Because it's yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with comics. So you have a multitude of styles. Or I know all about comics.
Yeah.
But so you did the Superman. I can't remember the name of it. The Superman comic.
Superman Identity.
Yes. It looked almost like you were doing ink wash or like rendered pencils on that.
Yeah, it was a black pencil crayon.
Was that what it was? Okay. So
and computer color.
How many days does it take you to be paid on that compared to your more stuff?
Not as many. The difference isn't as much as you might think because I was doing all the line art myself, it did take a little bit longer than I would normally do just on pencils, but essentially it was just the pencil work. I just had to fill in the blacks in a way that I don't when there's an inker involved. So I was using a rendering technique that I was already familiar with, and I would say that it was maybe 10 to 50% more, so a day and a half as opposed to one day.
You haven't done anything in that style since then, right?
No, I haven't, but I also left a lot out of that technique, so I didn't draw a complete outline around a figure in every case, and I was leaving room in the color stage for that. But because I was also doing the color, I felt comfortable in being able to go back to it and complete the drawing in a way that I, no matter how talented the colorist, if it was somebody else, I didn't think I could like leave half a shape, half a outline out, and still have the outline be completed and colored by somebody else. So the color process was actually the thing that took a long time, and I would say that it doing fully rendered color without a flatter. On a 200-page book, ended up taking most of that time. So it was like 2/3 of the time I spent on the color work in that. But as far as Next Wave went, it was the same. I used the same amount of forethought, getting to the actual drawing than I do as I would with something that's more rendered. It's just a different style that I apply.
Doing something new when you're with a new style or whatever. Like the Next Wave, you would have done a sketchbook full of stuff before you decided.
No, because like you, I'm always keeping an eye on how much time I can spend doing something that isn't paying.
Yeah.
So what happened prior to Next Wave is that I had done a short story for Disney for Pirates of the Caribbean, which appeared in one of their kids' magazines. But it was self-contained. It had nothing to do with anything I'd done previous. And I felt like it was an opportunity for me to do a different style that I could, explore within 8 or 10 pages and then be done with. So that was like my half step from doing Superman and heading towards the stuff I did on the Ultimate books and Next Wave for Marvel. And when I started doing Marvel work that was similar to that, I was very nervous because it didn't look like the Superman work that I'd done previously, and I felt like almost like it was I was getting away with something that that I was pulling the wool over their eyes because they had expected me, they'd hired me to draw in a certain way, but then when nobody said that I couldn't, I was able to explore it, sort of to its utmost, which was probably the Next Wave. But that wasn't appropriate for the next job, which was more like a traditional superhero job.
I have a quick question. You're just talking about experimentation with like aesthetics. Mm-hmm. But also along the same note, how much research time do you give yourself prior to the start of the experimentation of a new style or new tricks?
Well, like I said with the previous example, for me, there's a way to do it that can still be a paying job, or at least a job that's complete.
You try out on a short story somewhere,
or even in a sequence, like you did that sort of Archie style.
Well, I've never read an Archie comic before.
But even so, it's sort of a self-contained unit that you can play around with, and it doesn't affect it.
Occasionally, in a job, I might do a two-panel flashback, which is drawn in a totally different technique, and if it turns out okay and quick enough, then I'll remember that and use it again later. But most of the time, it depends on the story. Any changes have got a certain story.
I can't explain that at all. But, we started a little late, but it's just after 5 now. So if there are any other questions, now's the time. Otherwise, I'd say give a warm Toronto farewell.